start I'll start by introducing myself. I'm Emmanuel Musango Simlamo, the co-chair of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense. Thank you.
Malisi Standing Timele, co-chair of the Joint Standing Committee, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee.
Can members introduce themselves and then those who are here to for submissions will follow. And that was thank you.
My name is David Mania. I'm a member of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense.
Shahid Isan, member of standing the Joint Standing Committee.
Tim Sankamed, a member of this committee.
The presenters, over to you, Service.
Shall we continue the presentation? Just an introduction. Good morning. Well, my name is Des Barker. I'm the Acting Executive Director in the Defense Portfolio at the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research.
Good morning, Bachelors. I'm John Wesley. I'm also from the CSIR and I'm the first institutional memory regarding the Defence Review.
Good morning, Chiefs and Honourable Members. I'm Aziza Fredericks from CSIR, Parliamentary Liaison.
Good morning, Honourable Chairs and Honourable Members. I am Juliet Coleman from the University of Cape Town.
Good morning, Honourable Members and Chairpersons. I'm Sharon Grunmeyer from the Centre for the Study of Democracy, University of Johannesburg.
Hello, Beth.
Good morning, Chairs and Members of the Committee. I'm Dimitri Jasa. I'm with the Department of Defence.
Good morning, Honourable Members. Kendai Mbuchana, Minister of Defence.
Good morning, Honourable Members. Titi Kundu in the Department of Defence, FNDF.
Good morning, Chairperson Lorette Lowe, Ministry of Defence.
Good morning, Chairperson Manel Lomorodi, Ministry of Defence.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Michael Cox from the Department of Defence.
Good morning, Chairs and Honourable Members. My name is Nick Sandel from the Department of Defence. Thank you.
Let's continue on this side.
Tom Andrew from the Royal Defence College.
I'm Lara van Rensburg. I'm the researcher for the Joint Standing Committee on Defence.
My name is Calvin Mangai, the researcher for the Committee on Defence.
My name is Alison Wanka, Committee Assistant.
Good morning. My name is Guleko from Guleko Nongwele from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Morning, Kochi. My name is Washington Zindoga from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Honourable
Chairperson, Honourable Members, I'm Charlie Collin, Research Fellow at the University of Cape Town and former member of the UK Parliament, and I'm extremely impressed how democratic this Parliament is and look forward to seeing how the Select Committee goes that same democracy. Thank you.
Wyndham Harkey from Business Day newspaper.
Okay, thank you very much. For as long as we are in this room, we need to know who you are. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Secretary, you introduce yourself and you give us apologies.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honours and members. I'm Ulola Matikani, Committee Secretary of the Joint Standing Committee on Defence. We have apologies from members of Parliament, Ms. Kani, Mr. J.J. Kosana, and Ms. Amy Kalakis. And we also have three apologies from the people who submitted the letter from the Institute for Security Studies and the Defence Service Commission, as well as Sunbank. Thank you, Chair.
Those are the apologies. Thank you very much. Honourable members, we are going to have a presentation. We start with the CSIR. As you know, we are dealing with public hearings on defence review. I understand that other people, they don't know that it's not for the first time that as this joint committee, we get engaged in this defense review. So now we're having public hearings, but we have been engaging with this document called the defense review from our previous term. Thank you very much. With that, with those few words, I'll head over to CSIR, whoever will be presenting between the two gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chairpersons, and good morning once again to all. My name is Ed Barker, as I've mentioned, and next to me is my colleague John Wesley, who is the institutional memory and has worked with the Defence Review Committee since this Defence Review was called for review. I bring you greetings from our Chief Executive Officer, Dr. Sbisi, from the CSIR, and to thank you for the opportunity to be able to make the submission in terms of the technological requirements of the SANDF in the future. By means of introduction, allow me, for those of you who are not briefed on the CSIR, it's a little bit of a strange animal in that it serves to the Minister of Science and Technology. Yet we have a defence portfolio within the CSIR which reports to the Minister of Defence, hence our involvement in the defence review. We have, for the last 70 years, been the de facto in-house technology and research development capability of the DoD. For some historical perspective, it was after the Second World War, during which time South Africa was involved in producing rockets, guns, bombs, and started in the field of radar. And it was under the drive from the then Prime Minister, Jan Smuts. He appointed a chief scientist who then took over the responsibilities of technologies, research and development in the country. This post of the chief scientist today doesn't exist anymore, and that's why you see during reading of the defense review in chapter 15 that reference is made to the chief scientist itself. So, this is an information brief, and I need to also mention that we're moving in a world, and you'll agree with me, that technology is advancing exponentially, and the military cannot afford to remain behind. And you cannot have, in accordance with the defense review's stipulated requirements of a technologically advanced military, you need to have the research, the scientists, and engineers to back up this effort. So my intention is to talk to you shortly about the defense review's trajectory and make some conclusions and recommendations. If I can just get this to go to the next slide. I think what is important to note at the moment is that in terms of the science, engineering, and technological requirements, the national priorities of the SANDF have been met in the past, and at this juncture in the presentation, I would also like to extend an invitation to the Joint Standing Committee on Defence to visit the CSIR and to visit the defence portfolio to enhance the understanding of the innovative engineering, science and research work that is being done in support of the Department of Defense. As we've mentioned, the CSIR was an active participant in the defense review process by providing inputs based on its experience of working with the SANDF in the last many years. Our comments at this stage in terms of the strategic trajectory is that we feel it is well considered and defines the correct macro strategy for the South African National Defence Force. We also believe that it's not necessary to wait until the entire process is complete. One can already start with aspects of, at the administrative level of the defence review, looking at things like changes to the acquisition and procurement processes, which is a stated imperative by the chairperson of the Arms Corps Board, that we need to introduce science, engineering and technology into acquisition processes at a much earlier stage. Already we have undergone a strategic alignment, realignment, bringing in the state-owned entities and enterprises such as CSIR and Allen Arms Corps in developing a coherent technology roadmap. And then, of course, as I've mentioned earlier, is that, and it referred to in the defense review, is the issue of the defense, or the chief scientist, rather. Some examples in the defense review, one refers to command control, and any soldier will know that you cannot conduct any military operations without efficient command control. We have so many sensors around these days, information overload, in fact, and part and parcel of the efforts in the defense review is to collate the command and control issues. And at this stage, both the CSIR, Danel and Arms Corps have formed a work group to improve the command and control functions of the DoD. This work group has now been expanded to include the Defense Material Division, the Command Management Information Systems, the Army and Air Force, as well as joint operations. And we've had significant results at this stage. Take another example, and that is the frigate, the acquisition of the frigates. Some of the problems that we would typically have to resolve the CSIR is to provide mobility to the frigate force in anti-piracy operations. The pirates operate highly mobile small vessels. Frigates are fairly large and inertia. We were tasked to design a modification to the frigates which would allow the frigate to offload at maximum speed the special forces. So the design, development, the initial concept, all of the aspects required from a technological basis are done by special forces competency area at the CSIR. So we are now able to support the Navy in anti-piracy operations, but not only in the hardware and the software, but also in the development of the doctrine and the tactics involved. I include a sketch which actually encompasses and encapsulates what is being said in terms of where science and technology fit in to the picture of the defense review. We all know that we're looking for, as an objective, efficient joint operations. And if you have a look on that matrix on the presentation, you'll see that there are capabilities. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 capabilities. They include information, intelligence, personnel, sustainment, equipment, and the budget. And the cross legs on the matrix is providing those capabilities not only to the command elements of the Army, Air Force, and Navy, but also to the services and the support functions such as logistics, training, military health services. And we see the role and function of the chief scientist typically manifesting itself by controlling what is in fact propagated in this diagram. So, in conclusion then, I'm sure we're all in agreement that technology is advancing at an exponential level. The equipment within the South African National Defence Force is all technologically advanced. It is essential that we change our approach to how we manage technology within the SANDF and how we're going to garner the support cross-cutting across all the defense industry as well as through the various arms of service. And at this stage we've invested in administrative and organizational interventions, and we look forward in particular to the policy, strategy and processes which the chief scientist will develop and ensure that the technological requirements of the SANDF are adequately covered and addressed at the lower levels of science, engineering and technology for the Defence Force. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Do you want to add a question? Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Honorable members, this was the presentation from the CASIR. Can we have a discussion around the presentation or the submission? Honorable Mena, noted. Honorable Boye, and welcome members who came later. We have just started the new court in. Those two hands, Honorable Mena.
Thank you. I have two questions. One is a question of clarification. The other is a general question. But this question of clarification, I wonder, and I know that this is beyond the scope of your briefing, if you could outline the role that CSIR played in supporting the Defence Review Committee. I would be very interested in that. The second thing is very important for this committee, obviously, to understand specifically whether you are supporting the Defence Review document in its existing form, or whether you are proposing changes, and if you are proposing changes, specifically what those changes are. Now, it's unclear to me. Could you be more specific? Are you proposing amendments to this document? And if you are, what amendments, and where would those amendments be included in the document?
Honourable Member, over to you, Honourable Member.
You see, I agree with my niece, Honorable my niece. But by legislation, we do have a command structure. Now, what you are not clear about in your conclusion is you want to interfere with a command structure. But when you say, in particular, the organizational structure's policy, strategy, and processes of the chief scientist must ensure that both command and staff, you see. Now, clearly I indicate the relationship, you see, and the commanding structure that we have created through legislation doesn't accommodate the chief staff, you see. So, that's why I'm asking. I mean, more moving forward, because it's a policy document, and we're looking for policy matters. That, are you saying the managerial structure must change, or, you suppose, the other aspect, without you being in the harvest, you see, as you must understand that there's a secretariat. And normally the organogram of the SANDF is how it's constituted. You see, there's a command, there's a secretariat, there's a ministry. And if you say to us, give a chief scientist a position, it interferes with the organogram, you see. And the civilian oversight, you see, those are policy commands that we must be able to give respect to as we deal with the Defence Review. So what are you saying to us, you see? And if you deal with the three components, AMSCO, DINEL, and you are looking for a relationship, you see, how do you expect us to deal with that type of relationship? And also you must be able to reflect on all other arms. I mean, like in the defence industry, there's coal, you see. And one thing that I agree, there's RSC in Africa. But also I do want a developmental approach that says, how do we assist from a different notion? It's without that we just go in as militarists, we go in and we go and come in with an equipment that compacts, you see. What is your approach as CSIR in how we use science to assist within the African continent? Or the capacity that we have, you see, if you deal the peace initiative, you see, and you're part of the peacekeeping mission, what I've observed in the DRC would be like, when you finish with the war, there's a rebuilding of the society. Where do you place that? And I think peacekeeping within the government is extensive. Where do you place that? That's why we are a little bit, what is it that we want us to achieve together?
Thank you very much, honorable members. Are there any other questions?
Chairs, it's just the issue of intellectual property. You know, if you could have your straight and direct proposal on the issue of intellectual property on the things that the CSIR does and who remains the actual owner of whatever is being researched. Also the issue of marketing, where whose responsibility is that, to put it in a simple English, whose credit would that be if you do it with the credit of the department, it would be a credit of the institution, it would be the credit of the individual doing that particular research.
Thank you very much. I've got only one question to this issue. That is the relationship, current relationship between yourselves, AMSCO and DINER, in terms of the working together part. What are you doing together as these three entities currently? Thank you. Or you can have another bite. You also want one.
I just forgot one point. The issue, which is very important, of transformation within DSIR, vis-a-vis empowerment of those who have not been empowered so that they become part of the leadership of research.
Let's look at joint operations, capabilities. I mean, how do you, in terms of policy, is that I'm a little bit in concern, at which level, when you have got this scientific development, because I believe African conditions are not the same, you see. And if you want to have a scientific engagement with the defense force, with those that are in joint operations, how do you see a structure of the relationship? But it's also, we don't want to reorganize the defense force and disintegrate it at a managerial level, so that when you want to raise an issue, that would, but if you look at the war that took place in the war, I mean, what is that like? Where we lost a lot of soldiers. You know that, yes? Advantages you could have had. And a scientific advancement, I mean, you could have been able to have that capacity. But you got moved by rebels, you see. People are not organized. And Africa's got a lot of them. Now, if you deal with joint ops and the relationship and the challenges in the joint operations, how do you see scientifically? And where should we put your scientific? Because when we deal with according to chapter 14 and chapter 15, where should we be able to place you? So that you can be able to relate it. You are giving us bones and skeletons. Now we will have to ask more questions so that we can be able to arrive at the same level. But where do you think science will be able to assist us to advance? Because we are not working on the fact that Africa is there's a lot of threats. And if you want to counter those threats, you need to have better capabilities. And how do we do that? Where do we place you?
Thank you very much. I think if there are no other hands, you can answer those few questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. The inputs are really welcome. It gives us an opportunity to say a bit more that I know exactly what your requirements are. If I may start with Mr. Munir's first question about the role we played in supporting the Defence Review Committee. The CSIR has been mentioned in the presentation. Since the advent of democracy and the new position that the Defence Force finds itself in peace support operations, has had a fundamental change in our organisational structures within the operating unit of air defence. And really what we're talking about, the concept of the chief scientist, is mentioned in the defense review. And that, as you say, sir, it's at this stage a very bare-bones structure, saying he must be there, there's certain duties and things like that. And our key here is that that process that the defense review starts should be intensely investigated. And the slide I have up here is the important part. Up until now, science and technology has been confined to the solve functions, largely acquisition. But increasingly, as your example pointed out, sir, the need for supporting the commanders is increasingly important. So with this experience we have been gaining in the last couple of years, we were able to then sit down with the drafting committee and explain the changing requirement of science, engineering and technology. And that led to that new bar being put in there, defense, science, engineering, as a cross-impacting support function to all the core functions. Before it was seen as a support, science, engineering, technology was seen as a support function only to acquisition. And we believe this is the fundamental change, and hence the need within which was identified for a chief scientist, which can coordinate the activities to make sure that there is a science basis for new acquisition, the current situation, plus the other one which has been informally structured, that there's a science base to support the commander. So that has been the role we played in the drafting of this document. And it also answers your question as to where does it sit in the role of the chief scientist. We're not saying we want to break up organization. We say the things we identify as a new structure, an administrative intervention is required, and we support this. It's exactly the questions. We don't need another massacre of our soldiers and things. Command and control, we realized, is probably the most important one in preventing this. And that's why we switched just to the next question, which was, as I said, the management structures, we didn't want to interfere. The structures as they are put, we agree with that. It's just we need to sit down and make sure that the follow-on processes, we are part of those, and we have the opportunity to participate in that. And of course, chief scientist will probably sit in the secretariat, but he will also have to meet the requirements of the commander of the SANDF, the chief of the SANDF. So he's going to find himself sitting in these two positions, making sure that he's support to both sides, the secretariat side, responsible acquisition, certain activities, and the command side. Do we support the document as is now? Yes. The strategic trajectory as defined, we believe it's a very good base to start off with. We do recognize that budgetary constraints and other political decisions will influence the timescale. And our plea is very simply, we accept that decision, that part will take its course. However, we believe the right intervention now can already start easing the plight of the Defence Force in terms of science, engineering, technology. That's where we come from. So you mentioned post-conflict reconstruction. It is certainly today we recognize in CSIR, although there's an operating unit called Defense, Peace, Safety and Security, which is dedicated to defense, we also work with natural resources and environment, built environment, and there's many other ways we support this because we're looking at the broader national issues. And one of those that was researched by one of the other operating units was post-conflict reconstruction. And it is something that really it is, how do you wage peace after you've waged war? It is often more important than the war because it just to stabilize the area, prevent the insurgents from coming back into again find fertile ground for the type of extremism that we see. So although it doesn't form part of our mandate today, it is certainly one of those things we need to look at because if we look at security in the bigger areas, a peaceful Africa will be a peaceful South Africa. So we fully understand that. And this is part of the discussion that has to go forward, is how the limited resources can we get the best services for that. The question was raised on intellectual property. Intellectual property paid for by the state belongs to the state. And there is a new IP Act which has come into place, which governs our relationship in terms of government control of intellectual property. We have to conform to that. What this does allow is that there are rewards for the inventors of systems that these get commercialized, that there can be a share for that so we can encourage good research. Industries who develop it, they have may exploit it. There's
In some cases, though, there's a royalty expectation. Other times, there's no royalty expectation. But the feeling is generally by exploiting this in exports and things, government gets a far bigger return from that investment. The other source that we need to take very good cognizance of, other than DOD money coming in, there's also research from international. Today, defense research is internationalized, highly internationalized. And about 40% of our income comes from international cooperation. Now, that IP that comes in is fully available to the DOD, sir. So what the DOD is giving 100% of our IP rights with 60% of the cost. So we're leveraging the work, the fact that we have to work internationally to generate new IP, which can then be exploited by the DOD, and it doesn't cost the DOD for that. And this is one of the very tricky balances we have to strike, is with, at what level can you work internationally, but because you are governed by the NCACC and the Non-Proliferation Committee rules and things like international conventions, which limits the type of research, and we can do nothing without government approval, either through the NCACC or the Non-Proliferation Committee. So we govern by those laws and we go to that. And even in areas, there are some areas where the work, especially aerospace, some of the work goes into the commercial markets. Even there, before we engage in these activities, we advise DOD through the contracting agent, which is OMSCOR, about the work we're doing in the commercial aerospace market. Because that drives the defense and aerospace industry. And even that we will advise and we will make sure that we are not passing on national IP for free, but that we are actually harvesting IP, international intellectual property, from the international corporation. CSR or OMSCOR, no relationship. Members of the committee, honorable members, this was driven by the realization. CSR, DNL, and OMSCOR are organs of the state. If you go into our founding documents, there's a set of the state must certain, the government, country expects certain things from us over and beyond our core business. We need to look at the broad issues. And we realize things like human capital. We mentioned transformation. How do we jointly develop human capital? How do we do these things better? Instead of each one trying to run his own little business, how can we jointly address these? And for the same government bucks, there could be a much bigger pay. So it was driven by this. The fact that our mandate will contain certain core things government expects from us. And we said, we mustn't be in competition. We have to cooperate. We have one owner we are responsible to. Let us see how we can get beyond this, just a contractual relationship to a cooperative relationship, so that we offer the best. So that's what drove this. Some of the people who are board members of the CSIR were also board members of DNL. And they keep asking this question that they write the issues. So that's where this relationship is coming. This way we look at it two ways. The one is internally, how do we best satisfy the DOE's requirements? Secondly, is DNL is at OMSCOR, how do we approach the international market that we can get international sales through concurrency? So this is a very altruistic relationship that is there for the benefit of the country. It's not trying to score points or anything for each individual to get more money out of the government. It's to give the government better value for money. That touches on transformation. The CSIR is the report to the Ministry of Science and Technology, and Chair, we can always, I'm sure they'll be willing to provide all the documentation presented at that on transformation and the exact figures and things, but they are truly impressive. It's a very, very strong drive. In fact, you seem to work out here if they have to have a constant institutional memory. It's not, we're not transforming. It's really, there's a very strong drive to transformation. And there's great obstacability. A lot of what we said in our input was from the feed we got mainly from JOS, but they're saying what they expect us, and then the Army, their director strategy has put out an excellent document about Chief of the Army, because Chief of the Army is the man whose men take it in the face in peacekeeping operations. And it's what they stated with his requirements. And that's what this document was based on. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. I hope some of the questions have been covered. Any follow-up questions? Honorable Maynard, follow Honorable Boy.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to try and surface your core proposal.
and I think it speaks to the point that my colleague has made. There seems to be an appetite for the position of a chief scientist in the Defence Force, presumably to drive set foot. Where exactly, in your view, given the fact that it appears from your presentation that the set capability should be warehoused within military command, where exactly do you believe that the chief science officer should be located? I think that's the core. The other thing, the other question, perhaps I should be more specific, in respect of CSIR's role supporting the Defence Review Committee. Is it correct then that CIR played no role or did not develop the cost estimator models referred to in this document? That's what I'm after. Okay. Yeah. I'm following money.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are on the money now, but we had a good time in theoretical. You know, the experience with the armed strategy package was the FIFCAS, you see, and in terms of policy now, we need to be able to balance with the other socio-economic demands, and that creates reluctancy to support the defense force. So it's quite clear in my mind what you're saying, that you need to be able to prove to us, because we bought Fiat, we bought for Navy, and some of the equipment is back. You see, it's not working. It doesn't have sustainability in terms of how South Africans, you see, because we bought it from foreign country, but part of us is job creation. But when it came to that demand, you find that many South Africans couldn't assist into keeping those, products very, well positioned or well oiled, because they didn't know much about what is happening. And then people are scared to come and do that. How do you think SSCSIR, one, is going to help us with the skills development programs? And both CSIR, DNL, and AMSCO, but that for me is one bottom line. We have to get all of you under one institution so that when we deal with job creation, because if we want to contest with those that are like military, you need to be able to prove that they are going to create jobs, you see. So would you be able to give us a rundown of how do you think job creation will ever occur within this? You must understand, we have a challenge, we are under pressure. We have to convince Treasury that you are going to, this type of policy document can be very helpful. So some of your negotiations have to be fast-tracked to help us to come, so that we deal with the fiscal. It's the state that is going to spend quite a lot. We don't want to spend a lot only in the defense, and only find out those type of equipment that a few months I've got minutes on my neck saying, as the opposition, that was an unnecessary expenditure, you see. And we started to re-explain and going to and fro. Don't do it strategically to have you within that structure clearly defined. So this scientific person, where does it comes in, would even help us to be able to give a forecast of where does the expenditure trend goes and how much do we spend around those areas, you see. And be able to bring in the question of job creation and be able to see how do you assist in poverty elimination programs within the system itself. I mean, how can you, if you don't have it now, where can we be having expectedly that you'll be able to give us some guidance and how much will it cost us to reintegrate you within the broader scheme of the SANDF? Because coming you don't come empty handed, but also I hear we are saying that they've got international chapters and patient chapters. We are saying to us, if you bring in the international donors, what would it change to the environment of the fiscal itself? Well, very sorry, Chair. You said must read that and reach.
Well, thank you very much. I'm not sure, Honorable Boy, what you are talking about when you talk of patients. I've never interfered with your deliberations. I'm sorry if I intimidated you. Over to you, CSIR, on those two questions.
Yeah. Currently,
we have in the current structures, there's a body known as the Defence Research and Development Board. This is a joint board between members from defence staff and from staff from the Secretary of Defence. And that is the board that oversees the acquisition of technology. And what the feeling was is this is the board is a sort of a part-time without it's members with general duties and other duties rather than specialists, technologists and scientists and engineers being able to advise it. It's mainly current staff. And the feeling is if we go into the look at the capital development of the defense forces, see there's a strong drive towards having engineering professionals, medical professionals and things like that, a core of that. So the concept of the chief scientist is not just a one person but a structure that will take over the current activities of the current research and development board. It will probably in all things sit within the secretariat because of the very nature it is mainly around the acquisition of technology and developing the technology base. However, the structure of that technology base must be such that it also supports the commanders. So, and this is the question today that isn't quite clear. It's going to require staff with good analysis and things to take it forward and determine that position. So, the put the scientist is mentioned in Chapter 15. The cross-cutting thing is mentioned in Chapter 14, the introduction, but not discussed in Chapter 14, it's discussed in Chapter 15. And there seems to be some break in the continuity of the document, the trends of the analysis in Chapter 15, as it doesn't go along to the same sections like personnel development and things like that, that's in Chapter 14. And we believe that needs to be brought into line. That's going to require some considerable staff work. Does that answer your question?
I'm still here as the chair. Thanks a lot of us. Honorable issue, and then Honorable Mena. I also feel that the answer was insufficient regarding what Honorable Mena has asked. Or Honorable. Actually, we're only left with 4 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I just want to establish, to get in my mind, a clear picture, a concrete picture exactly where the CSIR fits into a whole equation. The chief scientist is the assumption made that it refers to CSIR. Okay. The second one is the international best practice to look at an entity that actually works within a defense force of this nature? Is the international best practice or is this a precedent? The other one is that the current status as an organ of state with clear FLA and MOUs between the department and the organs of state. Would the scope of that just be extended or is the need really to incorporate it as part of the defense? Or can the scope of the agreement just be extended? Currently they're working under that agreement and if the board's qualifications need to be altered, then such recommendations must be put forward for consideration. If that is a requirement to improve the productivity and also the expertise at that level. Does it require to be part of the defense or can it be done so outside the defense? The other one is the defense review currently is proposing that we're looking at integrating the NAL again under SANDF. However, CSIR reports essentially to science and technology and this is only one part of CSIR. So if that is the case, why should CSIR be incorporated? If it's only partly and that is one desk, a major portion of its research and technology actually goes to science and technology. So I think we just need to get the lines clear exactly what we want and if it's necessary really to be part of defense. The other one is reporting ministries. Clearly, those things have not come up as part of the defense review itself. The only consideration was the NAL and ARM school. The CSIR, as such as an organ of state even, has not been mooted and has not been part of the recommendation. And if this was the case, was this matter discussed during the engagements with the Defense Review Commission that was appointed? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think you have clarify the honorable's number of things here. Because the initial questions which when I recall was what are the proposals that we are planning as CFAR, you know, in your submission. Does it tamper with the organogram of the SAADF? So you have never been clear on that one. Over to you, Honorable Mania.
To take us forward, and through you, could I make a proposal that we ask the CSRI perhaps to present in writing a concrete proposal that makes reference to the Defence Review and sets out their proposals for amendments to Chapter 15 or any other chapter.
Yes, over to
you. You see why I'm happy with this question, because when you bring legislation, logistics to the commanding structure, we did that because we didn't want when an operation is being planned, logistics is seated somewhere else. So the need is there. You see, the necessity is there. But as Honorable Hissau says, there is a challenge in the order to defend scientists, chief scientists. How do we deal with it? Because it's going to disrupt, because clearly, if logistics, I've gone to logistics quite a number of times now. The decision that we took to bring them into the command is not wrong. But practice, the governance differently. Because when the joint operations came in and the peacekeeping missions came in, it became quite clear that our decision was not substantial into dealing with that type of relationship. We don't want to fall into the same trap, saying there's a chief scientist on command wants to give command to chief scientist of English. But if it's a civilian oversight, you'd have to go through the secretariat and get a decision being made. So maybe what Honorable Minister is saying is that can you really go back and engage the Defence Review Committee and reflect it, because it is going to disrupt the command structure. And if it has that impact, it also must show us the fiscal side. The other ministries, we don't want to build poor science, but also we do want to build the capacity of the SAADF. But we don't want to have an octopus within the defense force, or somebody who doesn't know whether they are count, but it is fiscal for everybody. That becomes the problem, you see. So direct us, be more specific. What does it mean and what implications, and talk to the Defence Review Committee and how we come and resolve this particular. It's an important development, but we need to deal with it, with all the needs that are it, and who controls it. Well, you don't understand, scientists can't run the Defence Force. They must take command somewhere. Is it logistics? But the Chief of Command is an overall head. But logistics is the one that deals with when the opportunity operation comes, they go to them and they get every logistical thing that they're looking for. So you need to be able to be clear, how do we do that relationship?
Thank you very much. Do you want to respond? Okay, you can respond, but be very brief.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Very quick, I just want to, maybe I'm listening to this, and I think that the picture which is not clear is that in this country we have a number of what we call the Defence Evaluation Research Institutes. There are a number of them. Not only the CSIRs, DPSS, but we have Defence Solutions, we have Protec, we have Ergotec, we have a number of groupings. I think that you've got to help me here, I think that the aim was to pull all of these under the Chief Scientist within the Secretariat to provide a coherent pathway so that everybody's doing in the national interest going along a path. And I think that it's just a matter of providing the structure, that minister structure, that would pull all of these groups together, including the DNELs, the research components, the ENSCORE research components, the rangers. And I think that that is possibly what was intended, to provide this chief scientist and his secretariat to herd the sheep, if you want to call it something like that. Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you, but I think from what I've heard from the honorable members, can't you go back and come with something tangible? Now we are raising other areas, you know, that we are going to get somebody from, researchers from Arms Corps, researchers. There are so many, you know, but the interest here is the Trent Review and the South African National Defense Force, you know. Let us not tamper with the organogram of the Defense Force. So if go back, go to the drawing board or to the mess arena, if the Spaniards will say, go and try and structure the whole thing properly. But thank you very much for the presentation. If you wish to listen to other presentations, we might do that. But if you want to leave the room, you can also. Thank you very much.
The next presentation is a DOJ or the Lucity. Okay.
Thank you.